Welcome to the Thrive with Holistic Healing Co. podcast. I am your host, Namita Mahanama. Here, I bring you the synergistic utilization of Western and Eastern modalities to help you thrive in your wellness, to thrive in your mental health, to thrive in life, so that you can feel and be your best self in body, mind, and soul. Thank you for joining me. So, let's jump in together and thrive. Hello, and welcome to episode 18 of the Thrive with Holistic Healing Co. podcast. Thank you so incredibly much for being here today. Today's episode is all about postnatal rage, or maybe you've heard it more commonly described or termed as mum rage. So what exactly is it? Why does it happen? When to seek help if it's actually part of something bigger than happening every now and then? And what are some practical strategies to help navigate through it? So I feel like this is an area of parenthood that actually isn't spoken about a lot as well. So similar to postnatal depression or anxiety, I think we do carry a lot of, or I shouldn't say a lot, but I think that certainly there can be elements and aspects of feeling guilt or shame or embarrassment when we do blow our fuse or we yell and we scream. And I certainly know that I will stop after I've had an outburst. I will stop and think, gosh, Namita, could you have handled that possibly in a different way, possibly better? I try not to judge myself in that moment, but I do often stop and pause and think, gosh, I really could have handled that quite differently. So there are certainly aspects of guilt and shame and embarrassment that go along with that. And so in our household, I actually do make a point of owning it. In our house. So if I have lost it, if I've lost my cool, I will openly say that I went into the red team and I'm so incredibly sorry. And I love having that accountability for how it is that we act. Now, there's nothing wrong with having emotions. And certainly if there's an emotion or feeling that's very valid, then working through it is quite a wonderful and a very, very important thing to do. But certainly I feel like if we actually identify it, we can own it, we can claim personal responsibility for the way that we handled it. That is where our power lies. I genuinely do feel that way. And so I don't want to teach our children that it is bad to lose your cool. There are obviously going to be times when that is going to be a natural human instinct. And, you know, I would never want them to suppress that if that's how they're feeling. So at the times where I will lose my cool, that is where I am going to use it as a learning opportunity always, absolutely always. We try to make every situation a teachable moment. But really, we do want to teach our boys that it's okay to have big emotions. But really, the first thing is always to recognize when or how or what the trigger has been that has inspired the reaction. And then also to incorporate and develop and learn and utilize strategies to reduce the blowout. So essentially, our whole premise is really for us to try to grow and for us to always be our best selves. So we actually always never shy away from the difficult conversations. We really try to openly communicate in our household, whether it's, you know, between my husband and I, whether it's between our children collectively as a unit of four. We do really try to nut things out. We don't leave anything that might be awkward or uncomfortable, whether it's behavior or situations that could have been handled differently. We're not perfect parents. We don't have perfect children. But I would like to think that no matter what presents our way, that through open communication and being able to own it, see where it's stemming from, why is that happening, and really try to incorporate strategies and nut it out together. I think that is certainly what we do. It's certainly something that we're learning along the way, is to never shy away from things. And I think postnatal rage is one of those aspects, or even rage or anger from children or outbursts in any way, shape or form, however that may present, is always a wonderful opportunity. So what actually adds to the layers of guilt and shame and embarrassment for me personally, obviously, if this happens within our home, is that the glass in our house is very, very thin, and our house is actually almost not on a hill, but it's sort of on an incline. So we're up the top and our whole street can hear me. Chandi's always telling me whether he's coming back from a walk or if he's whatever it is that's happened. If he's outside and he's heard me blow my fuse, he's you know, very aware and will tell me, he'll say, you know, we can all hear you. And so part of the embarrassment is when I have to come out of the house and see my neighbors, and you know, I'm always like, hi, and really I know that they've heard me at my absolute worst. So, you know, it's kind of embarrassing. I make a joke of it with them, but really I feel really, really silly that they've had to hear it too. I think they probably want to go and brush their teeth by the time I've had my little spat. Anyway, okay. So anyway, to kick things off, I guess I really wanted to start with, well, what is this postnatal rage or this mum rage or whatever term you might have heard it used as? Now, on the COPE website, which actually stands for the Center of Perinatal Excellence, and on their website, which is a wonderful, amazing resource that certainly I would direct you to if you want to look at some more research articles or some more or some information, that's definitely a beautiful resource for you, and I'll link that in the show notes. But on their website, the symptoms of postnatal rage can include or may include screaming or swearing more often, difficulty controlling your temper, physical expression of anger such as punching or throwing things, experiencing violent thoughts or urges, and feeling a flood of emotions afterwards, including shame. Now, that's direct from their website. Now, it didn't actually express a time frame or for how long a period, if this was to occur, that it is a sign of something bigger. Now, I guess in regards to the mental health first aid accreditation that I have, and also the learnings and the studying as a pharmacist in terms of symptoms analysis and when we would refer a patient to a physician, it would really be a 2-week period on a continual basis. So if someone presented with anxiety and depression symptoms that lasted for longer than 2 weeks, or for 2 weeks as a minimum, that is the guideline of a time frame that we would refer to a prescriber. So in a similar vein, I would feel, whilst the website hasn't expressed a very specific time frame, and this is just based on my assumption versus, say, clear guidelines of a definite, you know, universal law. And of course, I am not a psychologist, so this is not my bread and butter. I would say if it's lasting for 2 weeks as a continual basis, I would certainly escalate it, or I would see this as perhaps a symptom of something bigger. And I wouldn't ignore it. I would certainly chat to your GP, would certainly allow them to gain access to referring to a counselor or a psychologist to gain whatever extra help that may be necessary. So that's sort of, I guess, just my little disclaimer there, that a certain time period as to how often it's happening is going to be important here. If it's happening once in a while, you know, say once a month before your cycle, you know what that trigger is. And if it's just a repeated pattern, then perhaps we can allow for some extra boundaries, or we can allow for some extra cushioning or certain safety measures to perhaps minimize or mitigate it from happening, compared to, say, if it's happening every single day or multiple times in a day. I feel like if we were to ignore the underlying reason and it's happening over a continual basis, this is where perhaps we really do need to nut it out, see what's happening, unveil what's going on at a very deeper level. And that can be certainly done. A GP, referral to a GP will always be my first recommendation every time, each and every time, because they certainly are a triage. They act as a triage to help direct you to wherever it is that you need to go. So, stemming on from that definition or description of what it is, what exactly causes it? So, another important aspect here is that anger or this rage, it can very well be a symptom that may suggest an underlying anxiety or postnatal depression condition. And so this is where that 2-week time period, I feel, for me intuitively, it feels like that should be the right space of time. If it's an ongoing presentation of these symptoms, then it may be illustrating a bigger piece, a bigger part of this whole puzzle that we cannot ignore. And so I would simply say that if you're in amongst perhaps other symptoms, so you could be noticing changes in your sleep, you could be noticing changes in your appetite, changes in the amount of joy you feel in activities that you normally do enjoy. It may be a change in connection, it may be, I guess, self-care, maybe not showering as often, perhaps not changing your clothes. It could be that you've stopped wearing makeup. It could be that you are finding it hard to make decisions. You could be having physical, palpable symptoms of anxiety. You could feel lack of motivation, sleeping too much, sleeping too little, any kind of change in amongst the anger symptom. And even anger on its own, if it's an ongoing symptom, then please don't ignore it. But I do definitely feel like it can certainly be part of the bigger picture of postnatal depression and anxiety. So aside from there being an underlying health condition, which we definitely now understand that we're not going to ignore, and we are going to seek the appropriate escalation to a referring physician as we need to, right? We've understood that that is an important aspect. But aside from this, what else may be factors that cause this anger and the rage and this frustration? For me, it's this pressure cooker feeling, right? It feels like a bubbling under the surface where you could literally just explode. Well, the first, it can actually be anxiety or fear. So I actually will candidly admit that my default reaction, if I am scared, so if someone gets hurt, or if I feel like I'm not in control of a situation, for instance, if someone falls over, then my default is to get angry. And I don't know if it's nature or nurture, because my dad is actually exactly the same. And I remember getting in trouble when we were little, when we would get hurt, which I laugh about now because it's so similar. If I was to look in the mirror and see how I react and respond in the exact same triggers, it's the exact same way. So, I often think, is this nature or nurture? Because have I seen it and that's what's become an imprint in me? Or is it a genetic predisposition of, it's probably a mixture of both. But here I can see it in myself, and this is really a possibility for all aspects in all people, is the underlying emotion that comes out in this anger and frustration is really the anxiety or fear that something serious has happened. So it's this fear and anxiety, for instance, if they've fallen, gosh, then they could break their teeth or their face or their hands, or gosh, how are they going to, and you escalate into the future. So my youngest, Kayan, if he's ever sick or he gets hurt, I mean, he's the last person that I want to get sick or hurt, because he is a miserable patient. He will sit there. He just recently, the other day, fell and he landed on his hand. He was running on the pavement and fell. And so he's been walking around with a Band-Aid on his hand, with his hand out in front of him. He doesn't let it get wet. He hangs it out of the shower. It's quite the ordeal getting changed. Oh, watch my hand. And, I try not to pander to him, but honestly, so if he, for instance, get hurt, it's like, ah, I feel that annoyance because they know that what that's going to mean. And so it is the fear behind the anger, certainly in that instance. But also it can be the anxiety of the future. And so the situation with stress is another example of anger and frustration and irritation. And so for me, in my perception anyhow, in this state of thinking of about a future space, that we do feel irritated and frustrated in the current space. And that's that pressure of how are we going to get there? So we're here, but we're thinking about how we're going to get there. So for me, traffic and running late is always a trigger point for me in my anger and feeling irritable, because it's this stress of needing to make a deadline, but I can't actually control the present. I can't. And so I get annoyed. So I'll get annoyed if we're running late and the boys aren't listening and they're running around and being silly, always playing soccer in the house. Honestly, always. Or they can't find where their toothbrush is. They've left it somewhere, or they don't know where their shoes are. I mean, I feel like it's this, I need to be in the car 10 minutes ago, and then it comes out in this frustration. Yeah, it's this stress and this pressure cooker that ends up with anger, but really it's it's also the fear as well, that anxiety of the future, that stress, that thinking of a future space when the current space, the time is ticking away. And so what's so interesting is I don't know why I'm always late. If I was to reflect, it's either that I'm not allowing enough time, I'm not working backwards realistically enough, I either misjudge how long it's going to take, or the roads are getting worse after COVID. You know, maybe I still haven't fully worked out, you know, what's happening on the roads and the logistics of it. Or I also back-to-back-to-back-to-back book things that are not realistic where we live. It's just not. And I think I need to be very aware of the logistics and the practicality of where I can be at what time. And I say yes to everyone. And sometimes I really should just politely say no, because what ends up happening is I say yes to be the people pleaser and then I'm stretched. And when I'm stretched, there's not enough time. I get irritable and I get angry, you know, and it's not something that I enjoy being. I don't like being in that state, but I can see how it happens. Now, another reason why anger may present is because of this feeling or an actual lack of support. Now, whether this is with your partners or your family, your loved ones, society as a whole, perhaps not having enough access to babysitters, nannies, resources, extra hands. And so I'll always go back to this village and tribe and how crucial and vital it is, because it's actually really quite tricky if you want to be a career woman or a man, have businesses, look after children and all that entails, right? So activities, doctor's appointments, classes, homework, uniform, parties, birthday parties, making sure they've got presents, running a household, the admin side of life, being social, be fit, drink enough water, but have enough good pelvic control that you're not running to the bathroom all the time. Eat healthy, sleep enough, do all your CPD points as a health professional. I mean, you name it, the list goes on and on and on and on. And that does feel quite overwhelming. And it can be really hard to do it relentlessly. And it feels relentless, like this mouse on this little wheel. And you get tired. And if you feel like you're not being supported, you're going to get angry. I feel like that is a very natural human response, because it is perhaps a real cry out for help, like someone physically, logistically, help. And I feel I can perhaps see that if that is the reality for people. Now, I'm very lucky. My husband actually only works 3 days a week clinically, and the rest, of course, you know, we're busy with businesses. We've got you know, lots of different businesses. So clinically, he works 3 days, but he is very, very hands-on. Those 4 days, you know, like, I mean, including the weekends, he's very, very hands-on, picks up the kids when needs be, goes to golf, you know, takes the boys where they'd need to, helps with cooking and the groceries and just life things, you know. So I'm speaking from a very privileged space, and I get that, and I am eternally, eternally grateful for that. But still, I feel like I would love more hands, and I'm probably being very, very greedy, and yes, but maybe that's human nature as well, of always wanting more. And so I feel like this physical logistical help is certainly something that I can imagine causing anger in mothers, in parents, in fathers, if you feel like you're carrying the burden on your own, this, like you're a duck paddling underwater. I can only imagine what that would feel like. And so my hat goes off endlessly for single parents, truly, and how they manage to do this day in and day out. Honestly, my admiration is out of this world. You deserve all the medals in the whole universe as to how you do it, because it's a tough gig, and absolute admiration goes out to you. So I feel like that can definitely be another aspect of this anger, this irritation, this frustration of where the F is my village, and I can appreciate that. So the village is a very, very crucial component. I 100% believe and agree with that being a factor. Now, anger and stress can also come from financial stress and strain or insufficient childcare. It could be illness. And especially back-to-back illnesses now that we're out and about again. And I, for one, can definitely say this was our absolute worst winter we've ever had in the 8 years and pre-kids. So my eldest is 8, but pre-kids, we were never sick. But this one, we had back-to-back illness, one to the other to the other. We've had all the viruses possibly that was circulating around. And yeah, that was really, really exhausting. It can also be marital or relationship stress and strain, and that can come out in anger and frustration. But perhaps the underlying undertone is that there is a tension and a stress within the relationship, and that comes out in frustration. It can also be sleep deprivation. It can be burnout, and some underlying needs that aren't being met. And it feels like this bubbling. That's the only way for me I can describe it, is a pressure cooker situation, like that top just needs to be released and let out. And so in the spirit of being open, I wanted to really, I guess, go through some of the things that are my personal triggers and, you know, what makes me angry. And I've kind of touched on it very briefly. Obviously, if someone gets hurt, that's one for me. That's the fear of the unknown, the fear of what does that mean, whether it's having a little boy that's going to be sticking his hand out everywhere, even putting his car seat on. Oh, you have to watch my hand. I mean, honestly, beautiful, it's a gorgeous boy. But yes, when he gets hurt or if he's sick, he, cute little koala. But yeah, it drives me nuts. Anyway, so my triggers, the first one would certainly have to be having to repeat myself a million times. Now, that could be a million times saying the same thing over and over again in that day, or it could be, you know, when you wake up, go to the toilet, flush the toilet, open your blinds, turn the air conditioning off, make your bed. And if it's not done, it's like, how many times can I say this same thing? And it's exhausting. You feel like you're running out of air, picking things up and cleaning, you know, that sense of, come on, just be a team player. That drives me nuts. The boys fighting as they're getting older. When Kai was a baby and very cute and sweet and cuddly, and, you know, now he's found his voice, and so they fight. And that really, you know, is a trigger for me, especially if I'm driving and they're screaming at each other and already there's excess stimuli and movement and traffic and bipping and you're trying to park. That for me is just like a, come on, don't add another variable to this current situation. Also the disconnect, say, with having enough time to do something and you don't feel like you have enough time. So trying to make dinner quickly after you've gone to this activity and errand to make dinner on time, to make bedtime on time, or picking up the kids on time, and there could be traffic, or you're running late trying to finish a project, or you're on a call or at a meeting or whatever, it is a big one for me. And also too much noise and stimulation is a big one for me. The more I'm doing these podcasts and I'm really peeling away certain aspects, I can see that there is too much noise and too much movement and too much hustle bustle. It actually doesn't allow me to thrive as a person. So, you know, I am that person who's parking. I put the volume down. I get the boys to be quiet. And even Kai, when he's doing his pretend driving, he was doing this the other day. He was on his ride on bike or car. And he's like, Ari, quiet. I need silence. I'm driving. And I just, you know, I laugh, but really, I mean, they just imitate us. And so it really is a mirror sometimes. And so that's definitely, they're my sort of most common triggers that really get me going. And, you know, typically that would happen, you know, in the morning when we're trying to head out. It could certainly be of an evening when we're trying to wrap things up. Certainly it can happen all throughout the day, but essentially there's lots of different elements, but those are the general threads that really push my buttons. And I guess another point to add here is that we do live very, very busy lives, this Western hustle bustle, fast paced life. And there's so much stimulation. And I do feel like that is a common thread that as a society we do have. And the phone, we have constant information overload. And I dare say, whenever I look out at a cafe or I'm walking, people are always on their phone. So I dare say people are very much wired the same nowadays, is that, you know, there is this overstimulation. You have a thought, right, let's Google it or put this in my calendar, and then you're checking somewhere else. But because we're so wired and we're very much go, 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 hustle, bustle, I really do feel like we use alcohol, which is a depressant, to calm our nervous system down. It's almost like this, relax, have a drink, now you can relax. And this is because we're operating from this fight or flight system as a natural default reaction. But the issue with this is, or being in this state as a continuous pressure cooker situation, we end up relying more on alcohol, but it becomes a self-perpetuating cycle, meaning that we're using it for relaxation and it is a depressant, so it can certainly exert that effect, but it can certainly impair and interfere with our quality of sleep. So you can wake up tired. So for me, it 100% disrupts my sleep. And so I will wake up tired without a doubt. And it can enhance in anxiety. Certainly alcohol can enhance anxiety. And being a depressant, if you have a low mood, then it can enhance or potentiate its effects. Certainly if you're on medication, there are so many drug interactions with alcohol. And I would always recommend chatting with your pharmacist about the safety of combining alcohol with medication, especially Panadol. That's a real trigger point for me when people have Panadol and then have a drink. Please don't do that. Anyway, and so what I've really come to notice is that it can become a very self-perpetuating cycle. You feel more wired, you go and turn to alcohol. Yes, makes you relaxed in that moment, but the rippling effect the next day, you're more irritated, you haven't slept well, then perhaps you're reaching for more caffeine. And caffeine is a stimulant. And if you have anxiety, in some people it can perpetuate or enhance anxiety as well. It can also affect your sleep even more. And so this is a self-perpetuating cycle that happens realistically in the world that we live in. And I definitely can see with alcohol. So I get acupuncture done every month, 5 days before my cycle begins. And so my TCM, my traditional Chinese medicine practitioner, she will always work on my kidney and liver energy. And so that's very much connected to this heat, this irritable feeling that I have in my cycle, any bloating, any kind of issues like that. And so alcohol in itself, she always agrees with me that it can cause a big strain on the liver energy. And I genuinely do feel like it's an important time to say, to jot down in a diary or a journal to see how it's impacting you on that particular day, the next day, the following day. How long does it take for it to clear your system, to feel back to normal? I'm doing inverted commas here. You can't see them. But, you know, how long does it take for you to feel essentially back to your baseline? And so for me with alcohol, I would say it takes at least 5 to 6 days. If I've just had a few drinks over the weekend, it can take 5 to 6 days to recover. If it's been a longer period of alcohol drinking, so say there's been back-to-back functions, it can take up to 2 weeks, perhaps even longer, 2.5 weeks. It's been 2 weeks already since I've had a drink, and I still feel quite swollen, and I still feel like I've got that heat aspect. You know, my face is a little bit more red in areas where normally it wouldn't be this time of the month or for any other reason. So it is that excess heat, that quality that alcohol effects in my system. Now, another reason can certainly cause anger and frustration and irritability is sleep deprivation. It's actually used as a torture tactic in lots of different settings. Now, I personally love my sleep, and I need 8 hours to thrive. Absolutely. Any less than that, and I feel this empty kind of feeling inside, and I don't feel very well, and I generally have to catch up on this sleep debt that I've lost in order to feel aligned again. Now, Ayurvedically speaking, sleeping at 10 p.m. is the latest time that we should sleep, ideally before that, but 10 p.m. should be the latest, and we should wake at 6 a.m. at the very latest, and that's the optimum times to rise and sleep. Now, not every body type or constitution needs 8 hours. The pitta person would need less. The kapha person would like more, but most likely needs less. And a vata type would certainly need that, you know, as much sleep as possible, because they thrive on that. And so that's my vata quality there, that I certainly need that sleep. My pitta type or constitution within me can certainly, if I had a deadline or I needed to stay awake, certainly I could do it. But I certainly would need to make up for that, and I wouldn't be imbibing my absolute best self by skipping out on my sleep. And so emotional regulation for me personally declines. I become like a baby. If I haven't slept properly, my ability to have a calm result definitely does decline. And so another aspect of me personally being angry is being hangry, meal skipping, having low blood sugar. It does. It absolutely causes this irritability and anger. And it happens the same with my sister. It happens the same with my dad. I notice with my boys, it's the same. They need to eat. I know, I'm like, okay, it's getting past a certain number of time, and I know that I need to offer them a snack, because I know that their emotional regulation is not going to be as perfect as it possibly could be had they had a nice steady blood glucose level. Then I dare say for anyone else listening here to check in and see if that's a trigger for you in terms of you becoming angry or frustrated or resentful or irritated or any of that particular thing. Now, from an Ayurvedic perspective again, so as well as my vata makeup, so the vata makeup is made up of the air and space element. And I also have a pitta constitution, and that's made up of a fire and water element constitution. And so certain habits actually can increase that fire aspect. So things like alcohol, ironically, chili, fermented foods, sour foods. Caffeine is a stimulant, but it still actually can aggravate this pitta or this fire aspect. Meat is generally more heating in energy, or virya, as they call it, than vegetables. And so if there's too much heat, so in summer, having those items, you're feeling hot in general, this can enhance your pitta and increase anger. So certainly there can be more incidences of road rage. And so that's something to be observant of when nature is going to be enhancing heat, that traditionally, that can obviously translate or come into our body as well. Now, I'm also in my pitta stage of life, so middle age, and generally speaking, after menopause is when we've completed our pitta stage and that we're moving into our vata stage of life. So naturally, in this time frame of my life, and I dare say other mothers and parents, we're operating in this pitta stage of life as well. So that can certainly, we're already operating and oscillating with this higher fire quality, and that's that passion and that vigor and that discipline and determination is what hopefully sets us up for our retirement. So we actually need these qualities to function and work hard and really establish ourselves for our older stage. But essentially, it's a factor to note as well that if we're having more fire quality and aspect in our life, then that can translate into this excess anger. So not to ignore that as well. And so the aim in Ayurveda is to balance that dosha, or to balance that heating aspect with cooler qualities. So to avoid those things that I mentioned before. So alcohol, chili, fermented foods, sour foods, caffeine, or certainly to minimize them as much as possible. And then adding more cooler energetic property foods. So things like coriander, parsley, cucumber, coconut water, cumin, fenugreek. There are just some examples of cooler qualities to help balance that. Now in Ayurveda, we speak of the state of mind or the quality of the mind. And so this is called the gunas. And in terms of the rajasic guna, so that's the mental state or quality of the mind being go, go, go. And, you know, we are that way inclined. You know, if we are business owners or we are career people, you know, there is a lot of, you know, next got to grow, this stimulation, our minds are active. And actually in Ayurveda, our aim is to always enhance the sattvic quality of our mind. So that poised, calm, gentle, serene quality of our mind. And so this is where mindfulness practices actually step in. And these all work to enhance the sattva. And so do nutrition choices. So do what we watch on TV. What are we listening to? What are we smelling? Is it offensive, harsh odors, or is it soft, sweet, beautiful smells? And so they all can have an impact on the mind to make it calm, balanced, poised, or is it going to actually make it aggravated and full of movement and busy? What's happening? What impact is it having on our mind? Now, mindfulness is also very important to nourish our nervous systems, and they are going to be stretched from the stress and the hustle and bustle and the life that we lead. And so this is kind of connected to the anxiety and the fear that forms the basis of anger and rage symptoms. So this anxiety and fear is actually going to be balanced by doing or participating or allowing earthy grounding practices to occur. And that allows our nervous system to be nurtured, because that's supporting our vata system, our air and space system. So this excess movement, where the more earthy, the more grounded, the more mindful, rooted practices we do, we're going to be reducing or minimizing this fear and anxiety, and in turn reducing our anger. So following on from this, my first pearl to practice this week is really going to be for you to observe what your triggers are. I just feel like this is such an important step, because if we ignore what it is that's actually causing us to be angry, if we're just noticing, yes, I'm getting angry, but we need to look a little bit deeper than that. If we don't know what our trigger is, we can't find solutions. And so I was very open with my triggers. And so spend some time journaling, meditating, perhaps just sitting in a space and thinking about what your triggers are in the moment where you lose it. What triggered you? And then think of certainly certain possibilities or solutions to rectify it. So for example, my low blood sugar level is a trigger. So the solution is to not skip meals. And so I always make sure that I carry a bar or a piece of fruit or something with me, whether I'm in my car or if I'm at home, that's fine. If I'm in a meeting, in my laptop bag, I will always have something there to eat. That's a solution. To me, running late while I'm still, that's a work in progress, my word. But it would be essentially to leave earlier or allow more time to get there or learn to say no or learn not to overschedule things that are unrealistic in Sydney. And there's one road in particular in Sydney that's near me that gets me every time. That's where all my swear words are taught to my youngest. And that would be, yeah, learn to say no, set some healthy boundaries about what's okay for me. I don't have to meet absolutely every single person and say yes to absolutely every single person if it's actually just not logistically possible. And so I would encourage you to work through your list. And if you do this with your partner, because they might very well appreciate doing this with you too, because they could help in the solution making process. That's actually really, really wonderful. And you can strategize together as if you were in a work meeting. There is no difference. We often treat work and home life so very different, but it is the same. In fact, I would hope that we would dedicate more attention and reflection and inward growth and communication within our own family unit than we would at a workplace. That would be idealistic, I know, but really, if you can do that, that would be absolutely fantastic. Now, general advice I certainly would love to say to please chat to your GP. If anything that I've mentioned to you sounds like, okay, I actually think there could be an underlying anxiety or fear. You know, generalized anxiety disorder is when there is this constant anxiety about any situation that ordinarily either didn't cause that before and suddenly has started to. So it could be a very irrational fear and anxiety, and that's coming out in anger. And these could be all things that you can chat to your GP about, who can then refer you on with a counselor or a psychologist or work through certain strategies. But I certainly, that fear and anxiety, it could be real. It could be part of a bigger condition, and it's not my place to diagnose or run through differential diagnosis of what it could mean or what it could be. That's not my place or space to do that. But what I would certainly say is that if you are noticing that there's certainly underlying factors happening here, then please chat to your GP. And aside from that, minimizing the triggers and implementing the strategies that you've brainstormed becomes very important. And also definitely asking for help in the areas that you need to. So it could be budgeting. It could be clear boundaries and delegation of what you need help with, and very specific, crystal clear discussion and delegation of what you need help with. Divide and conquer. So instead of both of you going to take your children swimming, divide and conquer. One person can take the kids swimming while the other person works on another aspect, if that would be helpful for you. But I feel like establishing clear cut boundaries, what's going to help you specifically. It's not helpful to say I need help, because that's a very broad and general statement, whereas breaking it off into bite-sized pieces that can actually be achievable, I think that is a beautiful space to be. Now, my thought process also here is that with anger and frustration, if it's bubbling away at the surface, then it's a pitta type of reaction or emotion. And this can result in pitta type of conditions. And so if it is something that you're going to ignore and hope that it's going to go away, I just really would just say is if we aren't going to look at a particular feeling and not deal with it, I do believe that it will bite us in the bum. Literally, it can quite literally bite you in the bum. So I really, I'm all for not sweeping anything under the carpet and really just making it very clear about what your needs are. So here I'm just going to discuss some perhaps strategies, very practical strategies to help move through or to help work through at a very superficial level. So we're not talking pizza. So certainly deeper, more long-standing symptoms, always refer you to your GP 100%. But for the more superficial layers, things that we can address within the home, within your lifestyle, I'm just going to run through some strategies that I hope that you can adopt or employ if you feel like they are relevant and resonate with you. It's also really important to be very specific with what you need, but also quite realistic. So I can certainly sit here and say that I would love an au pair, but that's not an option right now. But, you know, in the house that we live in, it's not an option. But certainly a more realistic option is to find a babysitter that we can call on when we need them, for an example. So, you know, it's very well saying you can have a wish, but try to come up with something that's realistic, that's very much within your lifestyle, very much within your budget, very much within your practical realities. So, you know, that ensures, I guess, that you're not going to be setting yourself up for disappointment. So another strategy with sleep, if there's sleep deprivation, is looking at sleep hygiene. And so to ensure quality and optimum quantity of sleep for you. So I would recommend going back to episode 17 of the podcast and listen to all of the sleep hygiene strategies that I mentioned and listed that you can incorporate. And hopefully that will help encourage a good quality sleep and some strategies that you might be able to adopt that can work for you to really get that beautiful amount of good quality sleep. Another strategy is definitely looking at nutrition. So as I mentioned before, minimizing heating foods. So we want to look at the energy or the virya of the foods and choose foods that have a cooler virya. So things like cucumber, mint, coriander, peppermint, in addition to all the other ones that I mentioned before, are just some very good, quick examples of being able to have a subtle effect within the body. Looking at food that is more sattvic in nature versus rajasic in nature. So almonds, dairy, ghee, oats, they're quite sattvic. And so they encourage a calm, poised, balanced mind versus rajasic food, which garlic and onions are examples of very heating foods and that they can increase this rajas. And caffeine is a very good example, as is alcohol and as is chili. But it's going to be increasing that stimulation of the mind. We want more prana-rich food. So that's fresh produce, beautiful, fresh produce, less packaged and processed foods, which are going to be not nutrient-dense, convenient, yes, but not nutrient-dense. And that will have a quality and an effect on the mind. Absolutely. When we're looking at artificial colors and preservatives that are added to the factory made foods, then definitely will have an imprint and an effect on the state and quality of our mind, and it will impact our body. So looking at the very, very basics of vibrant prana-rich food. Now, as I mentioned before, it's certainly worth keeping a journal or a diary of what triggers are happening when you're feeling angry. Look back just within the last 24 to 48 hours and see what has changed. What have I done? Where in your cycle are you? Look at the moon patterns if you're that way inclined. See what's happening. Was there a stressful event that was the underpinning trigger of all of this? What is it? Have I had chili on every single meal, dipped with a side of chili sauce, adding alcohol as well, you know, with every single meal? I don't normally drinking a lot more, compensating with a lot more caffeine. All of these stimuli are going to have an impact on your body. And so you can look back and think, oh, okay, actually, I think I know why, what the underlying reason was. And then we can try to minimize a particular food group and see if it's going to help you and how you're feeling. Now, self-care strategies are also so important to fill your particular cup, and everyone will have unique strategies, but this certainly can help that aspect of if you're feeling like you're not being supported, or perhaps your own needs aren't being met. But being able to take little short, sharp sessions of time out for you to sharpen that saw is going to be a really, really beautiful act of self-kindness and an act of compassion. And, you know, it could be something like taking a long bath, or it could be going for a walk or a massage. It could be reading a book, and it could be reading a book while you're with your children. It could be whatever it looks like for you, and it could be something that you schedule into your calendar that is a non-negotiable, that you've blocked out this window of time, and you just do it and you let go of any guilt or shame or feeling like it's a luxury or a privilege. You know, you are deserving of it. And so it can really be used to help you feel like your needs are being met. And, you know, the washing can wait a day or two or three. It's okay. It's okay. It's okay. I really do think that to sharpen the saw, you wouldn't use a blunt tool. It would take a lot longer to get the job done. And in fact, you'll end up damaging it to the point where you'll have to throw it away and buy a new one. But unfortunately, you can't buy a new body. And even if cosmetic surgery thinks that we can fix everything, you can't actually get a new body if you're going to damage it really internally from working yourself to the bone and feeling like your needs aren't being met and feeling stretched and feeling stressed and pulled. So it's really, really important to do self-care strategies. And I know as working parents, this sounds like such a pipeline dream or something that it's very easy to say, but not very easy to do. But even whatever something small you can do, if you're feeling like your needs aren't being met, it could even be a self-massage. If you don't have the time, resources, ability to leave the house to get a massage, you can get some warm sesame oil and massage your shoulders, massage the crown of your head, your palms, your feet, the soles of your feet, the back of your neck, put on some socks, hop into bed and have a beautiful, restful sleep. And that could be it. That could, if that's what it looks like for you, then that's okay. But I think little short, sharp sessions are better than nothing at all, or waiting for this, you know, big, grandiose activity one day. It's important to just do little short, sharp sessions when and how you can. And so stress management and coping tools, I really feel, are a very, very important part of anger management, or how you could help to work through this postnatal rage or this postpartum rage. So breathing techniques, I definitely feel, in the moment of anger become a very useful tool. So breathing in to the count of 10, then breathing out to the count of 10. It might be smaller. So breathing in, 1, 2, 3, 4, out, 2, 3, 4. But taking the attention away from that anger and using the power of breath. A lot of people may also think to actually feel when you're feeling so angry to get a pillow and scream in the pillow, or get a stress ball, or do a quick lap and run around, or scream on the top of your lungs, that is also a very healthy way to release your anger. If it's a situation where it can escalate by you being angry, we really want to pull our nervous system together so that it's in a state of a little bit more calm, so that a fight or an injury or whatever it may be does not actually escalate. So focusing, say, on the rise and the fall of your tummy when you're breathing, focusing on the breath on your upper lip as you're breathing in and out of your nose might be another. It might be using that mindfulness where you're actually concentrating, say, on the sense of sound and closing your eyes and paying attention just to the sounds that you're hearing. And so your attention is traveling away now from the thoughts of anger or what it is that's really driving you crazy. Now, another technique, which is a pranayama or a breathing technique, is one that can actually cool the body as well. So it's quite a lovely one for that pitta, that excess heat, that fire element with anger. And if you can curl your tongue, I can curl my tongue. So but a lot of people can't. So you can still do this with a flat tongue. But ideally, if you can curl your tongue and you're poking it out, it's not a video, so I can't show you. But if you're poking your tongue out and curling it, and then you're breathing in and out of your mouth through your tongue, and it's very cooling. So if you do this particular breathing technique, that is one that when you're feeling angry and hot inside, this can actually bring the sense of cool into your body. Meditation is another one, a mindfulness technique that can really help to control the thoughts and to control the mind. And there are so many different types. You can do a loving kindness meditation, which is a metta meditation. You could do a walking meditation, focusing on your breath. You can use an app if you prefer. But anything that's going to center your mind, bring that earth quality, controlling our mind as a skill. It's something that's really, really fantastic. Now, I actually have recorded a guided meditation working through anger, guilt, and shame in the album, and I will link that to the show notes. So this particular track was created in specific for postnatal time, and especially with postnatal depression, where feelings of guilt, anger, shame, resentment all come to the surface. And this particular guided meditation helps really to work through that specifically. So we're not ignoring it, but we're really trying to acknowledge that these emotions and reactions and feelings are there, and to help really just let it go. I certainly will link that in the show notes. And that's something that if you're drawn to, I certainly created it because I knew that it was a void that I certainly felt when I recovered from my postnatal depression, that there were those residual feelings. And so that was really where this was birthed. So yoga is another practice that actually enables us to use the power of our mind and our body to do asanas, which are the poses. And it's a beautiful practice of being completely in the now. And certain asanas in Ayurvedic yoga help to cool the body. So that's particularly good for the Pitta type, where specifically it can help to cool. So that would be something that you can look into. And other asanas can help to ground, that can help support the vata system of the excess movement and the anxiety and the fear. So it may be that you will require a combination of two different types of poses or sequences to help create that balance. But different asanas do certainly exhibit or exert different effects within the body. So exercise is a great one. So yoga aside, using your excess energy as a release with exercise is certainly a beautiful thing to do. I would suggest that at least 20 minutes a day to help boost the endorphins, being a good outlet, is a wonderful thing to do. Now, another thing I guess really is important is to say no when you want to say no. Don't say yes when you really want to say no. You have permission to cancel your plans if you need to. You really do have permission. The world will not end. And if deep within you, you actually just need to pull yourself back and go within and shut the world out for a little while, if your needs aren't being met and you just need to recalibrate, realign, or say no for just even an event, or, you know, cancel a particular class if it's just causing you so much anger and irritation and frustration to get there, then know that you matter and know that your needs matter. Now, another strategy is to use common herbs like chamomile and lavender. Certainly, you could use essential oils or plant extracts like frankincense or peppermint, lemon balm, bark rescue remedy. They're very popular for calming. Magnesium is an excellent muscle relaxant. It's very important, if you can, to reduce stimulation and noise to really calm that system down. You're really not adding any excess stimuli that you don't need to. Now, if you feel like your baby crying or your child whinging is setting off your anger, the most important thing to do is, for the safety and the well-being of everyone, including yourself, So please call your partner to step in or your family member to step in whilst you take a minute. So don't ever stay in a situation if you feel like it's becoming dangerous. Make sure the baby is going to be kept safe. Please take a breath, step away. And if you actually are really feeling quite scared as to how it is that you're feeling or reacting, then please call 000 if you're in Australia, or call Lifeline on 131114 if you're in Australia, because they have personnel on stand 24/7 and they can help talk you through it. They can help navigate you through your thoughts and feelings. But really, in that moment of absolute anger or frustration, if the noise and the whinging and crying is really setting you off and you just within you are feeling really a little bit frightened, then please reach out and don't ever wait, just in case, thinking that you can wait it out. I really wouldn't advise taking that risk, and to know that services and help are available. And I will certainly link the whole list of resources that I've actually published in my book, and it's a whole chapter within the book. So I will link the online version of this resource list. So it's within Australia. You can access all the resources with a click of a button. It explains what it is that they do and their contact details. It's just really, really an important, crucial tool that if you ever feel like you need quick, I don't know where to look, I don't know what help I need, it really does help to articulate what this service does, where you can find them, what they do. So I hope that I've given you a nice overview of what postnatal or postpartum rage is and given you some clarity on what is happening and what it might look like and what or why it can happen and strategies to help hopefully work through it or to get to the bottom of it. And I really just want to take the opportunity to say that if you do ever imbibe mum rage or parent rage, know that you are human and it is actually okay to lose your cool sometimes. It doesn't mean that you are a bad parent. You're not a bad person, and to really remove any guilt and shame that you may feel and embarrassment that you might feel, certainly own it. I think that shying away or pretending like you didn't react in that way probably isn't the most accountable thing to do. So own it. Explain to your children, explain to your partner, explain to whoever it is that you feel you need to, that you are human and that it is valid to have these feelings, and know that you're not alone. And really the biggest take-home message is to not ignore it. So if it's happening in isolation, once in a blue moon, once in a while, every now and then, or if you really can pinpoint, gosh, look, I know exactly what's causing it, try to find the solution, see if it's making a difference. I'm all about observation and observing what is helping, what's not helping, given a reasonable time frame to see how well it's working for you. But certainly if there's any part of this that really is making you feel like I actually need to speak to someone, then absolutely speak to your GP and know that there are so many resources that they can help to refer you to, and know that it could be part of a bigger condition or a part, it could be a piece of a puzzle that we just can't see from just one symptom alone or just looking at it from the outskirts or from a particular picture. I think that there is a whole host of things that it could potentially be, and that's okay. And it takes a thorough assessment, looking at you at your entirety from all of your symptoms and the uniqueness that you are in all that's happening with you, and they have the time and space to sort of identify and work through that with you, that would be definitely my recommendation 100%. So my pearl to practice, as I mentioned before, was for you to really identify your triggers and to think of one strategy that you actually resonate with that you can try to actually utilize or incorporate in that moment of your blood bubbling under the surface. So really, I want you to just pick a strategy, keep it there, you know, as a tool belt. And when you're feeling angry, if it does come up, I really want you to access it and I really want you to utilize it. And I would say it's probably a good thing to do things like exercise and breathing or pranayama or the meditation before you lose it again, because these are all strategies that can help to calm the resolve of the mind. Looking at nutrition and choices and what you're eating and alcohol, caffeine consumption, things like that, sleep, making sure your blood sugars isn't too low. Strategies like that are great pre, almost as a preventative or prophylaxis, or hopefully it can minimize it from happening again, but certainly to utilize or gather one particular strategy that you want to use when you're feeling angry. And then it becomes a go-to strategy and it's a tool that you can easily just pull out, boop, and use it when you need to. So that would be my pearl for you to practice this week. Yeah, so thank you so, so much for joining me today. I really hope you got something out of it. I really feel like I could talk and talk and talk. Really, truly, I think I could. But yes, thank you so incredibly much for joining me today. And until next time, I hope you have an incredible week. Thank you so much for joining me today. If you've enjoyed this podcast, it would be so amazing if you could leave a review, subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss a thing, share this resource and my Holistic Healing Co. website, where you will find all of the episodes and show notes, as well as share my social media to your friends and to all those who would benefit from its content. I hope you have received a beautiful takeaway to help you thrive, and I look so forward to joining you again next week.